Good morning. I'd like to speak this morning about the end. No, that's not the end of the PowerPoint presentation. It's just the beginning. But I'd like to speak about the end. This Sunday and the next couple of Sundays, we'll focus a bit on these events. And this morning, we focus on Matthew chapter 24, where Jesus gives some signs of the end. And we actually know that this planet will end one day. Okay? We know that whatever has a beginning must have an end. And if there's any beneficial teaching that comes from the Big Bang Theory, for example, I don't believe in it, but anyhow, when there was scientists, atheist scientists who opposed this theory for the reason that Big Bang says that the universe had a beginning, and whatever has a beginning will have an end. And we already know from the Bible that the universe has a beginning and will have an end. So what's that end going to be like? Is it going to be when our sun burns all its fuel, it burns out and we'll die, it'll be the frozen death of the universe? Or is it maybe in a few years when a nuclear holocaust will be unleashed on planet Earth and that's it, the end? What is it going to be like? And you know what? We are curious to know how the end will look like. And the disciples in the time of Jesus, they had similar questions. How is the end going to be like? And the bigger question, which is, when is it all going to happen? And these questions, they had these questions when they brought to Jesus' attention the temple in Jerusalem. They said, look at this temple. Look how magnificent it is. And Jesus says, do you see all these things? Nah, he's not very impressed. Do you see all these things? Truly I tell you, that's Matthew 24 verse 2. Truly I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. And the disciples go like, wait, what? Our temple, our magnificent temple is going to be destroyed. That must be the end of the world. You see how attached they were to that temple, how impressed they were with the temple. And they thought, right, so the destruction of the temple must be the end of the world. So later they asked Jesus this question, tell us, when will this happen? Right, the destruction of the temple. And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? What do you think of this question? What are they asking about? Please tell us. When is the temple going to be destroyed and you come back and this planet will have its final end? Okay? So they put together the destruction of Jerusalem with the coming of Jesus with the end of the world. Well, that's a bit tricky. What do we know about these events? Okay? At the time they were asking, it was pretty much year 30 AD. So 2,000 years ago. Roughly. So year 30, they were asking about these events. For them, the destruction of Jerusalem, the coming of Jesus, and the end of the world, they were all in the future. Okay? So he says, when? And they ask about three events together, and Jesus answers about three events together. What we know, though, is that destruction of Jerusalem at the temple, was that the end of the world? No. So because they ask it this way, Jesus gave them the answer and put these events together. Because, yeah, for them they were future, but one was in 35 years' time, one was in, I don't know. I know 2,000 years later it hasn't yet happened. So, when Jesus gives in Matthew 24 all sorts of events, some of them actually relate to the destruction of Jerusalem, and some of them relate to the end of the world. Imagine this. Imagine you go to a picnic in Clumber Park, right? You take pictures, okay? And you print them out on paper, whatever, card, you print them out. Then you have a picnic somewhere in the Peak District. Take some more pictures, okay? And you have a box with the two piles, and there are some neighbors that come to visit you, and you want to show them the pictures. They're on a tray. You trip over, and you spread them all over the floor. So you're putting it together. Okay, so these are the pictures, but they are pictures from two events, but now they are mixed up. They are together, so you go like, which is which? Okay, for your neighbor to take the pictures and sort them out, this is all from your picnic in Clumber Park, this is from Peak District, might be a bit difficult. And what's also interesting is that Jesus gives them pictures from the destruction of Jerusalem, from the end of the world. What doesn't apply in our illustration with the pictures is that some pictures might apply to both. What happens, it is possible that destruction of Jerusalem and the events associated with that event might be kind of, okay, this is what's going to be at the end, just on a grander scale. Okay, so that's how the images are placed together. So we look at Matthew 24, and we see what Jesus mentions there. So let's see a few pictures. Verse 5, what does he talk about? He says, right, I'm going to answer your question. Verse 5, before these events happen, and we know that the two events, well, rather three, are the destruction of Jerusalem, the coming of Jesus, and the end of the world. Before that happens, in verse 5, he says there will be false messiahs, okay, false Christs. Verse 6, wars and rumors of wars. Verse 7, earthquakes. 9 to 11, persecution against Christians, apostasy, and false prophets. Verse 14, the gospel will be preached all over the world. So we have a few events, right? Where do these events fit? Do they fit with the fall of Jerusalem? Do they fit with the end of the world and the coming of Jesus? Do they fit with both? Okay? And it's interesting that if you look at these events, you see, some people look at these events and try to differentiate them. Well, this belongs to this, this belongs to that. But if you take a very strict approach, you discover that even up to the destruction of the temple, 40 years down the line, from the moment Jesus is talking to his disciples, it is possible that these events were already fulfilled. Think about this. Were there false messiahs coming after Jesus left, up to year 70? Yep, a quick Google search, you discover even some names of some people who claim to be the messiahs. Were there wars and rumors of wars? Actually, before AD 70, I think there was one year, was year 68 or so, or 69, was the year that Rome had four kings. Okay? So there was one king, the other one killed the first king, and then the third killed the second, and the fourth killed the... So there was wars and rumors of wars. Also, there's the Jewish-Roman War between 66 and 135. That's still related with the fall of Jerusalem. How about the gospel reaching the end of the world? It's interesting that when you read the book of Acts, you see that the book of Acts ends not with the gospel reaching the end of the world, but reaching where? Rome, the capital. Chapter 1, Jesus, you'll be my witness in Jerusalem, in Judea and Samaria, and to the end of the world, and you would expect it to end somewhere, I don't know, in India, somewhere in North America. I don't know what they would consider the end of the world. Oh, by the way, what would they consider the end of the world? It would be the edges of the Roman Empire. Pretty much for them, that was the whole world. Remember when Mary was about to give birth to Jesus, the whole world had to go to their own birthplace. So the whole world is the Roman Empire. So since the gospel reached Rome, it's like, right, we hit the heart, now it's going to go all over the place. And it's true, in a few years, hundreds of years, the whole Roman Empire became Christian. So when we look at these events, we wonder, are these events described here associated with the fall of Jerusalem? Or is it the end of the world? Or is it possible that destruction of Jerusalem is a smaller version of the destruction of the world? Let's keep reading. Let's see some more pictures. From verse 15 to 21, Jesus mentions something about the abomination that causes desolation. Now, you all know what the abomination that causes desolation is. Okay, because actually says that if you read, it says, let the reader understand. Okay, and the reader goes like, no idea. Okay, but actually there is if you look at the footnotes, there are some references to Daniel. Okay, it's Daniel chapter 9, 11, 12, where this abomination that causes desolation is mentioned. What it is, this abomination that causes desolation, is a general with his army that are going to stand where they shouldn't stand, namely in the temple at Jerusalem. Remember, Daniel wrote to Jews, and they had the holy temple. In the holy temple, just the priests could go. And in the holy of holies, just the high priest could go once a year. So to have a foreign general entering the temple, that was an abomination for them. Okay? Why is it abomination that causes desolation? Well, remember that this guy who came here didn't go in the temple just bravely. I came into the temple. No, he was there to destroy it. And if you apply this abomination that causes desolation to the coming of the Roman armies in AD 70, when they came, they entered into the temple, to the Holy of Holies. Did you know what they did to the temple? They completely destroyed it. I mean, some say that they did so because the temple's roof was made of gold, okay? And when they burned the temple, all that gold kind of melted, so they had to have removed the stones to pry the gold out. That's why the destruction was so complete. But actually, we know from history that they destroyed Jerusalem completely, and there were about 1.1 million Jews who died, and about 97,000 were taken into slavery. They were enslaved. That's quite a desolation in there. So the abomination that causes desolation could refer to the foreign general who came there. Could it be a reference also to the end of the world, something similar happening? Maybe the Antichrist? How about verse 21? For then there will be great distress, unequal from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. Is it referring to Jerusalem? Is it referring to the end of the world? We've kind of said in the context of destruction of Jerusalem. Then from verse 23, he returns to the idea of false messiahs. Right? He already mentioned false messiah. In 23, he mentions false messiahs again. Again, it's in the context associated with the destruction of Jerusalem. Or maybe he's talking about the future. These false messiahs came around AD 70, but they'll come again at the end of the world. And look at verse 29. He speaks about more drastic events. He says, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. This is quite terrifying to read these things. But is this literal or figurative language? I mean, is it going to happen literally or is it figurative? For example, sometimes we speak figuratively. If somebody was to hear us say, says, oh, this thing costs an arm and a leg. Okay, we say that, right? Does it mean that I'm going to pay an arm and a leg? No, everybody knows that's not what I mean. It's just very expensive. So is it kind of figurative language saying it's going to be great trouble for Jerusalem? Or is that also great trouble at the end? Because you read the book of Revelation and it looks like the same language is in there. And verses 30 and 31 speaks about the return of Jesus. 32 to 35, he says that the above signs should convince us that he is indeed coming back. Right? So, have you got a clear image now of these events? You know which is which picture belongs to which event? Have you got a clear image in your mind now? Neither do I. Right? So you go like, well, why are you wasting time on a Sunday morning to read these things if we are not any clearer now? We thought you'd tell us which is which. But what is the purpose of this chapter? Why did Jesus give these things? Why is he so ambiguous? Do you think he was ambiguous on purpose? I don't think he was trying to fool his disciples. Yes, he was trying to teach them something. But look at verse 14. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that the summer is near. Okay? The point that he's making, the emphasis on the word near. It's near. Okay? It's kind of each time you see something happening, you wonder, is Jesus back? Is Jesus back? Is it the time? Imagine that you are waiting for guests, right? You're waiting for guests, maybe some important guests. And each time you hear a car driving past or stopping nearby, are they here? Have they come back? You know, I wonder whether that's exactly what Jesus was trying to do, to tell them, look, your job is to wait and wait patiently. But Jesus, we want to know the date. We want to know the time. Why did he not give them the day and the hour? We have the answer in verse 36. Why didn't he give them the date and the time of his arrival? Who would like to read verse 36? Matthew 24, 36. So Jesus says, when I'm coming back? I don't know. Nobody does. The angels? They don't know. I don't know. Only the Father knows. And he kept that under his authority. He knows when I am supposed to come back. So he did not mention his coming back with much precision because obviously he didn't know when that day was. But I've heard people say, we can't know the day or the hour, but we can know the year and the month. Kind of the day and the hour. And I think that's nonsense. I don't think that's Jesus what he's saying here. What he's saying and the point of the whole chapter. So if you want to remember one verse from this sermon, you forget everything. Please remember verse 42. Have a look at verse 42. That's our teaching for this morning. The whole chapter, I think, the reason you have the whole chapter is for that verse. What does verse 42 say? There's something we have to do. Therefore, keep watch, because you don't know what day your Lord will come back. Don't be too bothered about putting together events. Try to figure out, is it Russia? Is it Iran? Is it Iraq? Is it that? Is it? And Jesus says, keep watch. You don't know. It's actually impossible to know. Somebody commits blasphemy, actually. They say, oh, I know when Jesus returns. And there are whole religions, religions and churches around that say, oh, Jesus came back in 1914. Nobody saw him. You go like, well, he said that everybody will see him. So when you hear somebody putting a date on Jesus' return, please be sure it's not them. Nobody knows when he's coming back, but that's not the point. Therefore, keep watch. He didn't give us these events so that we use it like a tick box. Like, you take a tick box. This event happened. Tick. This event happened. Tick. This event. Oh, Jesus is about to come back. Let's get serious Christians and let's try to serve the Lord. And Jesus says, no, 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 no. It doesn't work like that. No. You have to be ready every day. Just like a thief comes when you don't expect him to come. It's not like the thief tells you, tomorrow, Saturday night, I'm going to nick some panels from your church. Okay? I'd be like, right, I'm going to be awake. I'm going to stay up in the flat. As soon as I hear something, I come out. Hey, go away from our panels. No, you just come on the Saturday morning. You're like, where's our panels? Gone. Okay, I have to replace them. That's just how thieves work. And Jesus says, you don't know. You don't know. Therefore, keep watch. Keep watch. You see, each time something happens that we might tick, we actually wonder, is it the time? Okay, is it Jesus coming back? Christians being persecuted, is it the time? Gospel being preached yet to another tribe, is it the time? The Bible translated to yet another language or dialect, is it the time? Do you see how it works? Keep watching. It's like your alarm clock ringing every hour, okay? There's another event, bleep, bleep, bleep. Keep watch, don't sleep. And he gives us some illustrations to convince us that his return will be quite unexpected. Have a look at what he says about Noah, verses 37 to 39. He says, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. What is Jesus saying here? Some people have interpreted this to mean that before Jesus returns and this world ends, people are going to be very evil, just as they were before Noah. But is this what Jesus emphasizes here? It's not so much people being evil because people have always been evil, and it's very likely they will continue to be evil. What he emphasizes is the unexpected event. For in the days of Noah, they were eating and drinking, having fun, enjoying their hobbies, and suddenly there is a flood. The only sign they had about the flood was which in the time of Noah? What sign did they have that there's a flood coming? And they had the sign for about 100 years, they say. Building the ark. Noah was the sign. He was a preacher of righteousness. He was building this huge building, you know, made of wood. And what are you building there? An ark. What exactly is that? It's a barge that floats on water. What water? There's going to be a flood that's going to cover the whole earth. Really? Okay, we'll see you later. Imagine you preach now, says, why do you go to church? Well, I'm getting ready. Where are you getting ready for the coming of Jesus? Jesus is coming back. Uh-huh. What is he going to do? He's going to put an end to this planet. Put an end to this planet. Have you never heard that this planet has been around for 4.5 billion years? And there's another 10 billion years that this planet is going to be around. You're Christians. You're just... You see, that was the only sign in the time of Noah. There were no signs that there was a flood coming, apart from Noah. There's no signs now, really, that people outside can understand. We can, but people outside cannot understand. And you see, for them, there will be gasps of shock when Jesus returns, when the heavens are split open and he appears. How about us as Christians? Are we going to be shocked when he comes? I think not. We're waiting for him. We'll be surprised. We'll be nice surprised that he has arrived, but we'll not be shocked. Like, oh, Jesus is back. I didn't even know he was coming back. Now we actually know. And also, when we wait for Jesus, it's not like looking at the CCTV monitor. They're waiting, oh, is the thief going to come? No, it's a different kind of wait. I remember when I was a child, and my mom went shopping, okay, and I was at home. I could hardly wait for her to come back, and I would hear the door, and I would run downstairs straight to her bags. Not my mom. Straight to her bags, okay? What's in there? Rummage through that. Should I tell you a secret? I still do that when Phoebe comes home. She comes home, goes through bags. It's chocolate. Ah, that's for me. Okay? That's the kind of waiting, you know, the child waiting for the parent to return. The same attitude Christians need to have towards the returning of Jesus. Ah, he's coming back. I can hardly wait. He's coming back. It's just when you read chapter 25, you realize that even for Christians, there is a minor complication. What's that minor complication? Let me go back to illustration about the mom coming home. You see, I wait for mom to come home and I go through her bags. What if my mom told me to clean my room? Which I failed to do. I might be a bit reluctant to show myself. I'll quickly go and clean the room and everything. So Jesus says, unfortunately, when I come back, even some Christians or some people who claim to be Christians will have a bit of a trouble with my coming back. If you look from verse 45 onwards, he actually speaks of Christians. By the sound of it, they are Christian leaders who saw that Jesus was quite late in his coming back. It's been 100 years, 200 years, 300 years, 2,000 years. Jesus is not back yet. I wonder whether he's still coming back. And what they do, they begin to do things like getting drunk, beating the other servants, mistreating other Christians, taking advantage of their position of leadership. And you look in history that there have been Christian leaders who have behaved like this. And you watch the news today about certain bishops and you go like, wow, how could such a thing happen in church? But that's exactly what Jesus prophesied would happen. And these people would abuse their fellow Christians. They have forgotten that the master is coming back. And I think, yes, the leaders are going to give an account for their ministry, but I think you would miss the point this morning if we say, well, this text is for Christian leaders. They'd better watch what they do, because in Mark 13:37, this is the parallel text, and in Mark 13:37, Jesus says, what I say to you, I say to everyone. In other words, what I say to you, the leaders of the church, the 12 apostles, I say to all the Christians. What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch. Watch. Be prepared. Be ready. You read the text in Matthew 24. You are not quite sure. Have these events happened? Are they still going to happen? And Jesus says, but that's the point. You don't know when I'm coming back. So be ready. Just to finish this morning, I've got a very simple test. What are your feelings when you hear that the world will end, Jesus is coming back, and he might do so tonight? This world, as we know it, will end. Jesus is coming back, and it could be tonight. He even gave the parable of the thief coming in the night. He says, it could be tonight. And I don't know what your feelings are, but I thought of three potential attitudes. Could be terror, could be worry, or could be happiness. And maybe you look at the thing that this world could end, Jesus could come back, and maybe you are terrified. You're like, oh, Jesus is coming back. Oh, that must be terrible, Jesus coming back. If that's your thinking, it might be because you are not a Christian. Okay? It might be because you're like, whoa, was this coming back? It has to be bad, right? No, it's actually something good. So if you're not a Christian this morning and you would like to know how to become a Christian and how to be ready for Jesus' return, please see me at the end. Please stop me at the end and I'm happy to explain more how you can become a Christian, how you can be ready for the return of Christ. But maybe you're not terrified, maybe you're just worried. If you are just worried, that means you are probably a Christian, but you know that in your life there are things that, well, that shouldn't be there. Maybe some sin that's not confessed. Maybe some things that the Lord expects you to do and you're not doing them. Maybe certain ministry God called you to do, didn't quite do it. And you're worried, well, Jesus comes back. And I think this is a good point this morning to confess our sins, to get ready, get in line with Jesus and just do. And if there's a sin that you're struggling with, that you're addicted to, please again see either myself or one of the elders of the church. Let us pray together. Let us work together so that there's nothing that stays on our mind. Oh, I wish Jesus doesn't come tonight because let's work on that. And the last one, happy. Okay? Happy. If you are happy that he's coming back, you're probably working for him. You're probably in love with him. If that's where you are, then that is great. Just continue on this path. And I want to finish and say that we as Christians will never be judged for our sins. Never ever. When you become a Christian, when you're a Christian, you'll never be judged for your sins. Never. But Jesus says we will be judged for how we spent our time, our money, our energy, our health, our spiritual gifts, and so on. We are going to give an account for that. He already hinted in the last parable here, but in chapter 25, which is for next Sunday, he will emphasize a bit more. Because you see, Jesus is coming back. As I said, he doesn't want us to sit in front of the CCTV and say, is he back? Is he back? No, he says it has to be an active kind of waiting. But again, please do come back next Sunday. We'll discuss more about this. Let's have just a couple of minutes of prayer. If you want to pray aloud, feel free to pray aloud. If you want to pray silently, that's fine as well. Just look at the list and think of the return of Christ. Where are you? Okay? If you are terrified, pray to Jesus and say, Jesus, I want to be yours. If you are just worried that if there's anything to confess, any changes that you need to make, please do. If you're like, yes, he's coming back, by any means, continue in that vein. Let's spend a couple of